Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's Managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta can make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
I've been wanting to have you on here for so long. Oh, it's going to be so good.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to And Just Like Her, Sex and the City podcast. I'm your host, Tara Llewellyn. Joining me this week, I'm so excited to introduce a new voice to this show, one I have wanted to have on for so long. Performer, activist, dog dad, earth angel, Gerardo Vallejo. Welcome.
Hello.
I've talked about you so many times on this show. I've described you as being my Stanford, solely just to give people the visual of like, this is my male best friend. We're gonna suss out if that's actually the character you identify with, which it doesn't have to be. But
maybe
you are just such a light in my life and someone who I've had umpteen million conversations with, revolving around all the topics that we talk about, that it just felt so important to have you here. So I'm so glad.
I'm so honored to be here, Tara, and I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
What an incredible podcast. I am an avid listener
and
lover of the show. It's so good. I love hearing everybody's takes and hearing yours, of course.
Thank you. Tell us where you're coming from right now.
I am currently in the middle of a move into apartment.
The fact that you agreed to do this with me in the middle of a move, that's friendship. That's love.
I wouldn't have done it for anybody else. You are my number one.
It's true.
Since
number one.
Week one.
Since week one, baby. So Gerardo and I met. I love the story of how we met. Gerardo and I moved to the city like within weeks of each other about 10 years ago. It was like January, February of 2014. And we were both at an audition for the Finger Lakes season. Finger Lakes like theater, regional theater, something. I don't know. No.
Who knows?
Redacted. Yeah. Anyway, we went to this open call. And I mean, what time did you get there? Do you remember? I got there at like 6 something and I was still like number 300 on the list.
Yeah, it was around that time as well for me.
Yeah. And so we both signed up on the list. I left, I came back and I sat on a bench. And I don't remember if you came and sat down next to me or if you were already sitting there, but I remember sitting next to you and you turned to me and just started talking to me and asked me, you know, what number I was and what I was singing. And you were so kind. And you told me that you had come here from San Antonio for 1 month to kind of couch surf and just test out the city and see if you liked it. And then you were probably going to go back to San Antonio. And so,
And I'm still here.
And he never left. We never got rid of him. Thank God. Mm-hmm. But I remember meeting you and just thinking you were such a light, such a spirit. And I genuinely thought I was never going to see you again. And then we ran into each other a couple months later through a friend of mine that I went to college with, you were doing a reading with. And you've been stuck with me ever since. Thank God.
Oh, yeah. Thank
goodness. It was just such a serendipitous, beautiful way of meeting each other. Mm-hmm. You were my first friend in the city and my number one since then.
I can say the exact same thing, Tara. And truly, the stars aligned for us to be together.
I know.
And we're stuck with each other.
literally forever. You are my forever friend. And we've just been through so much together. We've been through the ringer, the high highs, the low lows. And I'm excited to talk about some of them. Also really excited to talk to you about this today because the question that we're going to answer is, in a city of infinite possibilities, has monogamy become too much to expect? In the last episode, I talked to my friend Kayla about
a doll.
So sweet. But we were talking about secret sex, and I think a lot of these topics kind of blend one into the next, this one included, talking about, you know, people who we are seeing sleeping with who maybe we're too kind of nervous to introduce to our friends and family or too nervous to commit to. And I think a sense of commitment can also go hand in hand with this conversation. So for sure. I'm really excited to get into it today. But before we do, because you are a new voice on the show, I would love for you to share your relationship with Sex and the City. Do you remember when you started watching the show for the first time?
Okay, so I definitely was in high school. I can't tell you the exact day or time that I exactly started watching it, but it was always on. I had a bunch of girlfriends in high school, and it would always be the show that would be playing at, you know, if we were hanging out at this person's house, and it was on her television because she had the whole DVD set and we would be rewatching it. And so that's kind of how I got to know the show. Mm-hmm. But then I really fell in love with it because E! Entertainment Television used to show reruns of it. And I think they were shorter episodes and they cut a lot of the like more graphic scenes out. Mm. And of course it was edited for TV as far as the language was concerned, but my sister and I would watch it, you know, either after school or during the weekends. And that's really when I got to really familiarize myself with the show and with the characters. And that's what I truly remember when I think about Sex and the City and experiencing it for the first time. It was with my sister watching it together in this kind of E format way. So yeah, it's kind of interesting because I also didn't know how explicit the show was until I went back and revisited it a few years later when it was streaming, you know, like on HBO.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you remember how you felt about the show the first time you watched it? And especially being a person who was existing in Texas and being gay and like, I don't know if you felt the freedom of expression that you have currently being living in Texas as you do now here living in New York City. But how did you feel about the show watching it through your lens? And how has that shifted since you moved to New York?
Yeah, I think at the time it definitely felt like this kind of almost fantasy place. They were living in New York City, which I'd never been to. When I moved to New York City, it was the first time I'd visited New York City. I'd never, you know, been to the city before. And so it felt like this faraway place. And these women, you know, were so cosmopolitan and doing these very adult things. And I, you know, as a queer closeted kid in Texas in high school, just like didn't, you know, it was a fantasy. It felt like, oh my gosh, they are just living this wild, fun, amazing, free life. And it wasn't at all my reality. And so there was kind of this element of like fantasy to it. I just can't describe it in any other way because it did feel so removed and it felt so far away.
Yeah.
And now seeing it in this current lens, it's kind of interesting because I have this whole new perspective for the show where I do feel like, okay, yes, they are these liberated women in a lot of ways, but their reality is not necessarily one that is obtainable or accessible.
Yeah.
It's a different type of fantasy maybe that I'm looking at it now. I'm not too sure.
No, totally. Because we know the realities of living in New York. Obviously, we live here now during a very different time. But with that said, is there a character that you identified with as you were watching the show? And is there, has that changed? Is there a character that you identify more with now or has that stayed the same?
As a high schooler, I probably wanted to be Charlotte the most. I liked the idea of this kind of fantasy of being able to be married with, you know, the perfect husband and the perfect life and being able to show that kind of this idea that she wanted. I kind of also was like, okay, well, maybe I like that too. I like this idea of being so in love and somebody loving me so much. I think I really connected to that kind of aspect to Charlotte because she loves and she loves hard. And as I matured, I think I realized I am definitely a Samantha Rising.
Can I tell you, I mean, you've listened to the show. Do you know how many people have said that? I think that growing up is realizing that Samantha was...
Oh, she's the one.
Not only like the heart and soul of this show, but also realizing that she kind of represents maturity the show, and also represents like the kind of aspirational woman inside of us that we all want to embrace.
Oh, for sure. But I wouldn't be queer without also acknowledging Stanford and knowing that I think Michael Patrick King, as a gay writer, I think inserted himself a lot into the show through Stanford. Mm-hmm, and I feel like I didn't understand really the character of Stanford when I was in high school. I was like, oh my gosh, he's just so wild and he's kind of everywhere and he does so many things and he's seeing 10 different people at one time and it just felt so far removed. Yeah. But I don't know. I feel like Michael Patrick King brought a lot of his modern ideology to the show through Stanford.
Totally. I could see that. He's a character that we don't really dissect as much as we dissect the women, of course. Mm-hmm. But I think he's kind of like if we had to kind of rank the hierarchy of the quote unquote side characters, he does border on being a side character and a main character because he is so representative of the queer community.
For sure.
Because there isn't a lot of representation in that with these women, with the exception of when Samantha decides to date women. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, you don't really get to see a ton of that. There are either characters that come in and out in one episode, like the couple who asked Carrie to potentially be an egg donor a couple episodes prior, or it's really through Stanford Anthony, who of course we know he ends up marrying. We don't really get that perspective, so it's really nice to have that with Stanford. And I'm glad that the show, even though it was in 1998 when we were still kind of making strides towards inclusivity when it comes to the LGBTQIA plus community, I'm really glad that the show was a little bit ahead of its time in the sense that it really made sure to embrace that as well, because he does lend a perspective in almost every single episode. She doesn't just get this perspective from the women. They have this round table, but like there's always like the round table and then the conversation with Stanford
to
really kind of shed light on how his community feels or how he perceives his community. So bless, we got Gerardo's audio to work because I guess it wasn't fully plugged in before, but that's
fine. She did
fine.
Not so want to listen to me. And
he's coming
to
us loud and clear. It's okay. We just had to, we just had to wake her up a little bit. We had to be like, hey, excuse me.
Hey, I like you. You like me.
Yes.
Let's get along.
We like each other. Let's get along. Let's do a quickie.
I love a quickie.
I know you do. So this is season 1, episode 7, The Monogamists. The Netflix description is, Miranda reconsiders her attraction to Skipper after seeing him with his new girlfriend. Carrie runs into Big while he's on a date with another woman. I feel like those two should have been reversed.
100%.
Feels like B plotline, A plotline, and then nothing about the other women, which is so interesting. But anyway. So we start with Big and Carrie. They're full-blown dating, making out in the middle of the street. I would body check these people.
So annoying. Are you kidding me?
I would body check them. They're in the middle of the street.
There's like 100 people walking past you.
Pull over, literally.
Look around for
move.
Truly 2 seconds. Like all it takes is 2 seconds to see.
Just check your surroundings, babe.
We're holding up traffic.
They're very wrapped up in each other. They seem very together.
Oh, she's feeling it.
She's in it. And given what happens later, I don't blame her for thinking they were exclusive. He is treating her like she is the only woman in the world. I mean, he's definitely treating her like she's the only woman on the sidewalk.
Yeah. I mean, while they're together, yes, that's true.
We realize that Carrie has been so wrapped up in Big that she has committed what she says the cardinal sin of womanhood is, someone who has forsaken her girlfriends and has done so in the name of her new boyfriend. And I can't lie, I have been here before.
Oh, I've done definitely. This. Yep, I've definitely been there.
Yeah, I've been there. I've been on the receiving end of this. It is hard.
Yeah,
it's tough. Not
good. It doesn't feel good when it happens to you. It did happen to me. Yeah, when I was a little bit after high school. Yeah, a friend of mine got into a very, very serious relationship.
Yeah.
Or so she thought at the time was a very serious relationship. And she abandoned a lot of her friends. And we didn't see her for 10 years. It was really sad. Yeah, it was really, really sad. Just because, this is a person I had known since I was in middle school. And we grew up together. And to kind of feel that ghosting was really hard and really
I'm
sad.
Sorry.
We didn't speak for 10 years.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. Wow. Are you guys okay now?
We're okay now. Yeah. We reconciled about 2 years ago and we talked it through and I, laid out my heart and said, this just, it really hurt me in a really sad way because, you were such an important person and that can't happen. It can't happen again. If we're going to be friends again, it can't happen.
And I think that in adulthood, I think that's a lot easier. I think that it's harder to understand, and it's a lot easier for younger people when you're in high school and you're in college. Like, mm-hmm. of course you're going to get wrapped up in your
yes.
partner
yes.
because you are just like feeling these emotions oftentimes for the first time, and you put so much emphasis on your romantic relationships. But I feel like when you are in your 20s and definitely in your 30s, you've learned to prioritize your friendships just as much as you prioritize your relationship. And you realize that those people are just as important as your romantic partner. I mean, like, this show is a perfect example of that. Like, mm-hmm. Carrie, I think Charlotte says this, like, what if we're each other's soulmates? Because mm-hmm. they are. Mm-hmm. I think that you learn that along the way.
Oh, yes, and that comes with age. And being able to communicate that properly also comes yes, with age. 100%. Because, you know, as a kid, you know, when that happened over 10 years ago, I didn't know how to communicate that that was something that was hurting me. I was just very bothered by it.
Of course. And like, you don't want it to come across as like jealousy.
Oh, 100%.
Mm-hmm. We didn't know how to process those emotions. So it is I'm glad that you were able to have that conversation with
oh,
her.
For
and
sure.
I hope that you guys are actually able to have fruitful and mature and
oh, 100%. Balanced friendship. And also knowing within that 10 years time, I also committed that cardinal sin.
Yeah.
I also, you know, left my friends for what I thought was the enamored one of my soul.
Yeah. Totally.
You know, only to discover.
We've all done it.
No.
Mm-hmm. We've all done it. Anyway, so we learned this in a conversation with Miranda, who says, like, let's get dinner tonight. So she's going to get dinner with her girlfriends because Big has a dinner thing. They go out, they have the round table, which is very classic for these early episodes. Here's what Carrie's missed. Miranda's working a ton. Samantha is very focused on getting a new apartment, and Charlotte is practically engaged to a new guy. She thinks he's the one. Supposedly he's perfect. And Samantha and Miranda confirm there's just one thing, and that is that he keeps pushing her head down to give him head. He's perfect except for the fact that he literally just wants a blowjob.
Yeah.
And listen, I hate when guys do this. Most of the guys that did this to me, I was in college.
Yeah.
Maybe high school. Yeah. But she hates giving head,
mm-hmm.
which feels very on brand for Charlotte.
Yeah, 100%. I love the line when she said, yeah, I practice on a banana.
I pretended like it was a popsicle.
Yeah.
But
so
I just
good.
Don't like it.
Yeah.
And like, they have this conversation about it, which I think all of their opinions are valid. But
oh, it was a great combo. It shed a lot of light into the characters themselves.
100%. Mm-hmm. Because for me, I don't mind it. Maybe I didn't like it so much when I didn't know what I was doing
mm-hmm.
because I felt uncomfortable with it. Mm-hmm. But now I'm just mm-hmm. kind of like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I loved the line. I don't know who said it, but it might have been Samantha who said, I give head to get head.
Well, that's the thing. Here's the conundrum. Do we only give head to get head?
Mm, interesting.
I mean, well, Miranda puts a lot of emphasis on receiving.
Mm-hmm.
Head. She's like, it's perfect because it's the perfect way to get off without the possibility of
yes.
being pregnant.
I thought that was so yeah, interesting.
Hello.
I found it surprising that it came from Miranda that she said that, but it's so in line with her character.
It really is. That. Yeah.
But it almost felt like something maybe Samantha would have said, you know, as mm-hmm. far as like, oh, I don't have to get.
They're very in line though. They're yes. very in line mm-hmm. specifically in this season as they're being introduced to mm-hmm. the audience. I think they do kind of deviate a little bit with Miranda's character. Mm-hmm. She becomes a little bit more rigid, whereas I feel like in this early season, at least in the early episodes, it almost feels like Miranda and Samantha on one side, Carrie kind of in the middle, and Charlotte on the other end of the spectrum.
For sure.
And I think they had to move Miranda a little bit so that they all kind mm-hmm. of fit on a specific end of the spectrum.
For sure.
Samantha becomes the one who like genuinely does not want partnership
yeah.
and only wants to have sex. Miranda is also career driven and doesn't really want to necessarily get married. She doesn't want to have kids.
She wants but, like, a certain she does, kind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she mm-hmm. yearns for partnership as long as it goes her way.
Exactly.
Carrie, of course, then exists on her own, you know, point in the spectrum. And then Charlotte is on the opposite end of where Samantha is. So it eventually moves that way. But I think in these early conversations, Miranda and Samantha, very in line. Mm-hmm. If I could play a game of like pulling their lines mm. and being like, who said this? I feel like Samantha and Miranda would be the two that we weren't sure.
We should play a game. What. That is
we
fun.
Really should. That would be a lot of fun. So they get up, they're about to leave, and Samantha spots Mr. Big. Samantha's dress also gorgeous. That purple
oh, yeah.
with the fringe. Mm-hmm. Love it.
Yeah.
She and Carrie look so great together. Carrie's dress is also great. She looks good in anything like simple and cut like that.
I mean, Sarah Jessica Parker is like honestly the on model another level of all models.
The model of all models. She just looks so good.
Yeah.
Anyway, Carrie doesn't think anything of it. She goes right up to Big and she's like, hi, mm-hmm. until she realizes that he's on a date with another woman.
How interesting.
So
she was caught his off dinner thing. Guard.
She said something about this woman being stunning. Yeah, she's stunning. I mean, she stunned me. I was like,
yeah, no, she was gagged.
Yeah. So she asks him, are you seeing other people? And he basically confirms it, like, not a lot of other people, but, you know, she acknowledges to herself later, because she goes home, leaves him, and is just kind of like, okay, have a good time. I mean, what else is she going to do? Mm-hmm. But she does acknowledge that they had never discussed exclusivity, but then she asks, is it that men have an innate aversion to monogamy, or is it more than that? In a city like New York, with its infinite possibilities, has monogamy become too much to expect? And we will discuss that amongst ourselves mm-hmm. later. But we get the talking head opinions, which we're like kind of going in and out of talking heads and talking to the camera. We're starting yes. to kind of like balance that a little bit. Mm-hmm. But we do get some talking head opinions here.
Oh, for sure.
The first one, monogamy is having a partner, but also includes having sex on the side with prostitutes. Then monogamy is so incredibly dull. This one is probably, for me, the most important and relevant one of the conversation we're going to have today. And it is from the perspective of one of the men who talks about him and his partner having sex with other people. They call it the 90s monogamy. We have sex with other people, but we don't exchange fluids or phone numbers. And I just was like, that is the 90s monogamy. That is the current monogamy, I feel like, as well.
Oh, 100%.
We'll get into it. We get kind of a glimpse into everybody else's side stories. Samantha is getting a tour from her realtor, AKA Joel's mom from The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Did yeah, that's that? What, I noticed that. And I was like, oh my gosh, she looks so young.
Yeah, I know. She looks so great. So Joel's mm-hmm. mom is giving her an apartment tour, but she makes her promise not to work with any other brokers as mm-hmm. she's looking for an apartment. But here's Samantha does not. Monogamy. This is her version of non-monogamy because mm-hmm. she doesn't believe in monogamy. Mm-hmm. So she goes through another broker who she's also sleeping with.
Yeah, who's very hot.
My God. So cute. Yeah. And they're basically using these empty apartments to go have sex, which is so par for the course.
Yeah. And hilarious.
So it's Friday night and Carrie's out with Stanford. And Stanford says monogamy is on its way out again. Mm. It had a comeback in the 90s, but now everybody is looking to keep their options open. I also found very interesting. Mm-hmm. Justin Thoreau enters the chat.
The most handsome, the most young, the most everything.
I will say in this episode, we get two actors who go on to play other characters later in the series. So we see Justin Thoreau again. Do you remember that he's the guy who's like kind of a mama's boy and Carrie falls in love with his mom? Like the two of them have a really good connection.
That's him.
That's him.
That's wild that they used him crazy? To play a completely different character.
I know, who also dates Carrie. I could see mm-hmm. them having him come back to play someone who maybe dates like Miranda or Charlotte, but they have him come back as a character who also dates Carrie. Crazy.
Oh my gosh, that is wild.
But Jared is who Justin Thoreau is playing now, and he's a writer who has just been named by New York Magazine as one of the 30 coolest people under 30 in the city, which is like such a vague thing to say about someone. You are one of the 30 coolest people under 30.
Sure.
Anyway, he invites them to a party the following night because they're celebrating this 30 cool people under 30. And so he invites them and says he'll put their name on the list. But Big and Carrie have plans on Saturday night. And so when Carrie gets home, Big calls her, kind of acting like things aren't a big deal and is like, hey, we're still on for tomorrow night, right?
Why wouldn't we be?
She's trying to play it so cool. And this is the only shot we get to the camera where she's like,
I noticed that.
I'm trying so desperately here. But like,
but it
I
came
really
off
just...
a shrill.
And so she tries acting cool. He says, I miss you, baby. If a man is saying that to me, I'm sorry. Like, you're not exclusive with me. Do you? But of course she doesn't dissect it with him. She dissects it with Miranda, which is exactly what I would do. I would call you. I'd call any of my friends and be like, I need to talk about
this. Why is he saying that he misses me?
She literally is spiraling. Yeah. And Ellen brought up a very, very interesting point in one of the episodes. I think it was the 20-something guys. We're really starting to see Carrie's character take shape. Because in the early episodes, she was playing everything very cool.
Oh, for sure.
very cool, very coy. Now mm-hmm. she's invested.
This woman is spiraling.
She's spiraling. And I understand why. He's giving her kind of mixed signals. I think that she was really caught off guard. Mm-hmm. And it's very clear that they haven't had a conversation, which I don't blame her. I think that at the beginning of a relationship, you're treading lightly. There are a lot mm-hmm. of assumptions being mm-hmm. made. But they clearly have not had a conversation about what they both want.
Yes.
So she sits and dissects it with Miranda. And while they're doing so, Skipper shows up.
So funny.
Poor Skipper walks by with this his new girlfriend. Her name's Allison. She works at Vogue.
She's very pretty.
She's adorable. She's pretty. She's smart.
Mm-hmm.
And Miranda is triggered.
Triggered down. Oh, yeah.
She's like watching him as he walks off. Like, oh, my God, is he working out?
Did he get a haircut? I didn't know he would.
Yeah. No, babe. He's just got
yeah.
a
You're
new
just
addition.
Jealous. You're just jealous.
And the new addition is mm-hmm. named Allison at Vogue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Ellen said this was one of her favorite scenes, and this is also one of my highlight scenes of season one.
It's so iconic.
Skipper is having sex with Allison. They're hot and heavy,
mm-hmm.
and the phone rings, and the message, the voicemail picks up, and it's Miranda, and she starts leaving a message, and Skipper picks up the phone while he's in the middle of having sex with this woman. And he's like, Miranda, hello, hello, hello.
Deranged behavior.
Literally, Delulu. She's like, hey, I just want to see if maybe we could get dinner sometime. And he's like, yeah, sure. Okay. Okay. Bye. Hangs up. Says to Allison, like, hey, sorry. That was the love of my life and she wants me back.
The love of my life. It's that serious for Skipper.
It's so serious for Skipper. And Allison goes, you're breaking up with me while you're still inside of me?
So good.
Girl, tell him.
Yeah.
Like, she's a fucking catch. I'm sorry.
Yes,
she's
yes.
a catch.
So beautiful. Great
She'll
job.
She'll be fine. Yes. But also it sucks because as we come to find out later in the episode, Miranda and Skipper sleep together. And then she basically is like, it's okay if you're still seeing that other girl. Like, I'm going to see other people too. And he realizes that he's given up a mm-hmm. perfectly amazing girl in the name of this person who just wanted him back because she saw him with another girl and mm-hmm. just wanted to mm-hmm. kind of have like a footloose and fancy free relationship with him, which he clearly doesn't want.
No, no. He is in love.
He's in love with her. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the last time we see him.
Mm-hmm. I guess so.
I don't remember. I think this is the last mm-hmm. time we mm-hmm. see him.
Yeah, that would make sense.
So Charlotte goes exclusive with her new relationship.
They have a conversation.
They have a conversation about it. Samantha is still sleeping with her broker.
As you would. As you would. Because he is, that man was fine.
He's fine. And then Carrie goes to this party with Mr. Big. And he's greeted with a big kiss on the lips by this woman, Melissa, whose passport he's apparently holding hostage.
Immediately.
Immediately she walks up to him and just smacks like, just a... Right on the lips. Yeah. I was like, yo.
Whoa. What happened to hello?
Carrie handles it really well, though.
Yeah, she handles it with a little bit of humor.
She does, mm-hmm. which I was very surprised by.
Oh, this would have completely rocked my world if something like that happened to me. And I was feeling the way that Carrie was feeling, you know.
Yes. Then they go over to meet this guy, Max, who's hosting the party.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another actor who we see again later in the series. So this is James McCaffrey. And I know that because I dressed this man 10 years ago, shortly okay. after when you and I were in rehearsals for Grease.
Oh
I was doing this show called, I was doing this show called Almost Home. And James was in it.
Okay.
He is a lovely, lovely man. He's aged like a fine wine. He basically looks the same.
Oh, nice.
He's a very, very lovely man. Yeah. Anyway, he's playing Max in this episode. But do you remember the episode where Carrie's in the fashion show and she falls
yes.
on the runway?
An iconic
He's the
episode.
Photographer.
Oh, okay.
So another person who they were just like, yeah, come on in.
Yeah,
play another
back.
Character.
Yeah, come on back.
So Big introduces Carrie to Max as somebody special, to which he replies, Julia.
Mm-hmm. Now, who Again, the hell is Julia?
I'd be out there like, who the fuck is Julia? I'd be out the door so fast.
Yeah.
And then when Big tells Max she writes a column called Sex in the City, Max says, well, if you're looking for material, you're dating the right man.
Mm-hmm.
Big yikes.
Yeah. Like three strikes in a row.
Literally. She just keeps getting smacked
yeah.
and smacked and smacked.
Mm-hmm.
And then she goes, are we dating? I thought we were just sleeping together. Oh my God, what a savage. What a savage line. She just like takes it in, again, she's taking it in stride. She's
but you
like,
can tell that she's mad. It's not just kind of like she's taking it completely.
Of course she's mad.
Like, no. Oh, it's whatever. No, she's upset.
Of course she's upset. Mm-hmm. I would be upset. Yeah. She leaves, she walks away. He runs after her and she's like, how many people are you sleeping with? He goes, what do you want from me? And she said, what do I want from you? Nothing. Mm-hmm. I don't want anything from you. And she leaves. Mm-hmm. It's not that Big did anything wrong, right? They never discussed exclusivity. And so subsequently, sure, he's technically not doing anything wrong. But you also didn't disclose that to her. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, she's not seeing anybody else. Yeah. So she's not disclosing that to you because there's nothing for her to disclose. Mm-hmm. You are seeing other people and in turn should have said something.
Mm.
I have faced this before. Many times.
Mm-hmm. You don't say.
What? She says, I felt like a fool. I realized I'd gone so far out on a limb with my feelings that I was standing out there alone. And I have felt that so many times.
Oh, yeah. That's a scary place to be.
It is. When you feel like you've put your feelings mm-hmm. out there, but you feel like you're standing there by yourself because mm-hmm. this other person is clearly fine with sleeping with other people, mm-hmm. dating other people, whatever it may be.
Because mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be about sex, you know.
It really doesn't.
No.
Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, it's really just about...
being vulnerable.
Yeah. And sharing your expectations with each other.
For sure.
That's really what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so she ends up going to that party that she was invited to by Jared. Stanford's there.
Mm-hmm.
This is when we get the whole scene between Miranda and Skipper. And then we go over to Charlotte and Michael, who end things over the fact that she does not like giving head. And she tells him that. And he says, okay, well, I plan on getting a lot of blowjobs in the future. And I hope that you're there when I get them. And she says, what is that supposed to mean? He's like, if I'm not getting them from you, I'm going to get them somewhere else.
I mean, he was honest.
Honestly, the thing is, these people were not right for each other.
No.
Clearly.
No.
And I'm not saying that you should give up relationships in the name of blowjobs, but I do think that like you need to make sure.
Saying that?
I think I might be saying that.
I think we are saying that.
And also the thing is that there's no way that Charlotte eventually goes on to not be okay with this.
Yeah.
Case in point, if you've watched And Just Like That.
Yes. Quite literally.
She's definitely giving a blowjob to Harry in the bathroom when her daughter walks in. So I think she got over it. It's about the right person.
I think, and that's exactly the conversation that they had.
Yeah, that is the conversation they had at the round table. So anyway, Samantha is still cheating on her broker with another broker. She's starting to hook up with him in this new apartment. Joel's mom walks in. She's very, very disappointed in her. But nothing to me is better than that boob grab.
That was some of the best physical comedy I've seen in ages.
It was so, so good.
So good.
Oh my
and the
gosh.
Fact that Samantha didn't care, like she was just like, it was perfect. It was perfect.
It was so good. She's just looking at her like, I can't believe you weren't going to show me this apartment. They were cheating on each other.
Yes.
They were really literally cheating on each other. Anyway, it's 2 a.m. Carrie's with Jared, who asks her to go home with him. And so what does she do? She calls Big. This to me is one of the weirdest moves that Carrie's ever done.
It's giving maniac.
It's like, giving cringe. She's like, actually, let me call cringe. And ask my dad. And so then she calls Big and she's like, hey, I just want to let you know I'm going to go home with somebody else. Like, what?
My jaw quite literally dropped. I was like, I guess I'd forgotten this happens in this episode, but I was like, this is maniac behavior. This
literally.
Is truly like, what are you doing, girl? And then when she says, oh, say hello to Jared. It's like,
say hello, Jared. Hello, Jared. It's like, what
is happening, Carrie? What, like, you are unhinged.
And then she's like, come here. You come here. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah, truly.
I said this in the last episode, the one about secret sex, because Carrie gets really drunk. She thinks that Big is ashamed of her and doesn't want to introduce her to his friends or show up for her. And so she literally goes to his apartment, knocks on his door, and is like, I just want to let you know that if you're too ashamed of me, we can't see each other anymore. Storms past him, goes into his apartment and pours herself a martini. Like, what the fuck?
Unhinged.
And so I'm like, if a person did that to me, I just don't think I'd want to see them anymore.
No.
But what I said in the last episode is that this gave me permission as a young woman to be like, oh, I can be super unhinged and a man will still want me. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. I used to do crazy shit. And maybe not like this, but like I used to do crazy shit like this all the time.
Oh, for sure. But
because
it's
Carrie
not
Bradshaw
okay.
was doing it. No.
It's not okay. Not okay.
No. Mm-mm. It's giving a little.
Oh, it was unhinged. Beyond unhinged. Beyond.
Yeah. Totally. Anyway, it works. Big shows up. I guess, kind of, does it? She tells him where she is. It's 3 a.m. He shows up. They have an argument over whether or not they met at the right place. And she tells him that she's been on the merry-go-round. She's been through the revolving door, and she feels like she's met somebody that she can stand still with for a minute. Mm-hmm. And she wants him to stand still with her. To which he just looks at her, smiles, puts his arm around her, and holds her.
Yeah.
Which I guess is the symbol for I'm going to stand still with you? Question mark. Is it?
Is it?
I would literally look this man in the face and be like, are you standing still with me?
I'm having issues with this. I'm having issues with this. Yeah.
You are.
Because once again, we didn't say what we wanted to say. This is all very coded still.
Will you stand still with me?
Okay, I'm standing still with you right now. Like, I'm here with you right now. You know, it's not, the conversation isn't complete.
She's still not saying, because when he says to her, what do you want from me? Mm-hmm. And she says, I want nothing from you. I understand if that's your answer, if you decide in that moment, are no longer with this man. Mm-hmm. Instead, what you did was you said, I want nothing from you. Then you called him at 2 in the morning.
I'm going to go home with Jared. I'm going to go home with Jared.
Hi, say hi, Jared.
Looney Tunes behavior.
And then the final line is, in a city of infinite options, sometimes there's no better feeling than knowing you only have one.
Oh, but do you?
But do you?
But do you care? But do you have
but
one?
What? I don't know that you have one. Yeah. I'm very confused.
Very confused. Yeah. Overall, I thought it was a great episode.
A great episode. A great episode. Despite the fact that we think Carrie's a little unhinged. Great episode. Yeah. Like, I think she handled it well up until a certain point, and then she just, like, did a 180, you know?
I think this episode did what it did best was really establish the characters, which is so important, you know, in season one. Like, we are getting to see snippets of the Charlotte, of Miranda, of Samantha, of who they are as complex characters and how they kind of operate. I thought each one of their stories was strong because it did establish who they were as people, you know, not necessarily like the thing that we're going to remember, you know, six seasons down the line, but just as establishing characters and the way that they operate, it was really good.
Totally. No, I fully, fully agree. And the subject matter, I think, is still so relevant today. So the question that is posed by Carrie is, in a city like New York, with all of its infinite possibilities, has monogamy become too much to expect? And I just think this is a perfect question that is so applicable to today, because living in New York City, we understand how many infinite possibilities are out there, and the accessibility to those infinite possibilities has only expanded since the 90s. Because now, not only are there infinite possibilities, but you have, like, you have the exposure and accessibility to all of them with app culture. It becomes so much harder, in my opinion, to commit to someone when at like the swipe of your finger you could be looking at a database essentially of all your other options.
For sure.
Step into a snowy bonus this winter at Borgata Online and sign up using bonus code NJPABorgata, and we'll roll out the red carpet for you with a 100% deposit match up to $1,000 plus 20 bonus dollars on the house. Download the Borgata Online Casino app today to get in on the action and enjoy the same Borgata Atlantic City excitement right at your fingertips. From popular slots and progressive jackpots to exclusive games and live dealers, Borgata Online has it all. Sign up now with bonus code NJPABorgata and have some festive fun this winter on the Borgata Online Casino app. Borgata Online reminds you to play responsibly and offers resources to help you make appropriate choices. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Must be 21 plus. NJ and PA only. Please gamble responsibly. Visit BorgataOnline.com for terms and conditions. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable site credit bonus bets unless otherwise provided in the applicable terms. Rewards subject to expiry.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
It's Ram Truck Month. Hurry in for great deals on the trucks built to help you drive your own story. Take center stage with Ram 1500's available 540 horsepower Hurricane engine. Command the spotlight in our most luxurious Ram 1500.
or steal the show with the new Ram Heavy Duty lineup with an available Cummins high-output turbo diesel engine. Hurry in and drive your own story with Ram 1500, Motor Trend's 2025 Truck of the Year during Ram Truck Month. Ram is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
So, tell me your thoughts on this.
Okay, so I think that the question itself is really posed kind of interestingly because the final part of the question is, has monogamy become too much to expect? And that is the part that I'm having trouble with because she's saying, is it too much to expect? Why are we expecting anything? You know, I think that is kind of what I kind of was left with is like, why is Carrie expecting anything? If you haven't had a conversation, why are you expecting anything? If you have had a conversation about this, you should expect something because, okay, we had a conversation about this. We know that I want monogamy. You don't want monogamy, whatever it may be. We talked about it. We talked through it. And now I can expect, okay, I expect you to be monogamous with me. To me, it's hard. It's hard to agree or side with Carrie when the conversation hasn't been had. And so when you are pulling kind of this idea out of thin air, how can you expect anything? Because Big can't expect that they're in a monogamous place because they haven't had that conversation. And I think actually it's interesting that you brought up app culture because I think actually now, yes, we do have this plethora of options, but on your profile, there is very clearly a way to state exactly what you are expecting. Yeah. And so if you are wanting to date people on, you know, online or wherever it may be, you can state, I am only looking for non-monogamous sex. I'm only looking for something that's going to lead to a relationship. I'm only looking for a friends with benefits, whatever it may be. It can be laid out a little bit more clearly. Mm-hmm. And I think now in the year 2024, there is, I guess, more of a understanding that we have to be open with one another and kind of say what it is that we want. Maybe that comes with maturity. Maybe that comes with time as far as society progresses. But I think we understand we have to be honest with one another and telling each other what it is that we need from one another.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
And maybe that's the thing that I'm struggling with because Carrie's not, this is, to me, that whole conversation on the phone where she's with Jared and when she's expecting these things feels very immature and it does feel almost like, girl, you, this is high school behavior. Like, yeah. What are you doing?
Totally. This is very emotionally immature behavior.
For sure.
This is kind of the first, one of the first signs. Again, I brought up the episode prior with the secret sex and her barging into Big's apartment. Like, that is a sign of emotional immaturity. It's also a sign of maybe letting alcohol take over. Maybe this is as well. But when those really, really, for lack of a better term, toxic traits come out, it's hard to ignore them. And I mean, Big seems to be ignoring them.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not ignoring them, but
no, he likes her. You can tell that he likes her, but he's in. Yes. Yes.
He's rewarding it. Yeah. Here's what I will say, because I completely agree with you that if we don't share our expectations, how do we expect someone to show up for us in the way we expect them to without sharing expectations, right? I think that from a woman's perspective, having dated some men who have in the past, and this is a generalization, but I feel like men in the past have used the excuse of we've never established exclusivity to date other people and use that as a means to not disclose that they're dating other people. You know what I mean? And I think that maybe that is kind of where Carrie's coming from, in that she has an innate tendency when she starts dating someone she really likes, that's it. And I think that most women also fall into that category when they're like, I've met a guy who I really like and I see being potentially the guy I want to quote unquote stand still with. I don't want to go on the merry-go-round anymore. Like, this guy is it. And I feel that's mutual. I feel like the two of us are on the same page. But I do think that it is more common. And again, I'm speaking in broad stroke generalizations. I do think that it's more common for men, heterosexual men specifically, to still seek out other options, even if they've met someone they really like, at least in my experience.
I mean, I do not have experience with that breed, but from the horror stories that I've heard,
Well, part of the reason I wanted to have this conversation with you is because I'm curious to know how this question exists in the gay community.
Yeah.
From your experience.
Yeah. Women and queer people are just an advanced species that we understand communication as being the priority as far as relationships are concerned and being able to talk to one another and saying the things that we expect from one another. I think there is I guess once again, we're speaking generalizations, especially in New York City, there is a more open kind of idea when it comes to monogamy and being just available to accept people might not be monogamous with you, but if a monogamous relationship is the thing that you're looking for, you're able to speak that. And it's not something that is shamed upon, or it's not something that is frowned upon. It's just something that we have to talk through and find out whether or not that relationship is for us and we can coexist in that world. I think there is definitely in the queer community a kind of sense where things don't necessarily have to be monogamous and things work out for you in the way that they work out for you. And as long as you have a partner that is willing to be on that ride with you and you both have the same expectations, then things are cool and chill and fun.
For sure. Do you feel like that's a lot more common in the queer community than it is in...
I would definitely say yes.
I think so too.
I would say not all, you know, I definitely have a lot of friends who feel like they could not be in an open relationship or be in a relationship that is not monogamous. I think there's just an understanding of being able to talk to one another and not being scared to not have to fall in line with heteronormative standards of yesteryear. And I feel like maybe monogamy is this idea that is a standard that was placed upon society, not necessarily from looking at it as a modern standard. Maybe it was something that was established, you know, in the 50s, in the 40s, whenever it was, you know, as far as society norms, this kind of a thing. Because if you look at history and you look at societies in the past, families were communities and people were not necessarily monogamous towards one another, and in other cultures throughout the world. You know, we're speaking about America and we're talking about, you know, very modern things right now, but if you look at history in the past, not everything has always been men and women together forever, only one, and that's it. Does that make sense?
Totally. My next question for you was going to be, do you ever think that we've actually been monogamous as a society? Because you brought up the 50s, and I think that's a very interesting place to kind of start with, because I think when we think of kind of antiquated societal norms, we kind of think of like that 50s housewife and her husband, and like he goes to work and she stays at home. At least that's kind of the first thing I think of. I actually Googled when like the term, because I think that the terminology surrounding non-monogamy has evolved a lot, at least like from my memory of the last like 100 years or so, are swingers and people who are married but like swing with other people. And that actually started in the 1950s.
Interesting.
Yeah. Polyamory, and then like now being in an open relationship. I just feel like we've used different terms to put this title on kind of the same thing. But in actuality, I feel like even in the 50s, in times when we were quote unquote monogamous, were we ever really? Men were having affairs.
Yeah.
Long before that. Oh, I also don't want to just generalize. There were probably women having affairs as well. People were having affairs.
No, I don't think so. I think, as long as societies and rules have existed, rules were made to be broken and things were made to not always fall in line in the way that they're supposed to. And so when you set an expectation, there's always going to be something that subverts the expectation and maybe doesn't go according to what you think is going to happen.
So do you think that as human beings, we are built to be with one person?
Oh, that is such a good question.
Here's no. where I will also break it down. I'm going to break it down.
Okay, break it down for me.
I think that right now in our modern society, this definition that is given to us in the talking heads of quote unquote 90s monogamy, I have a partner but mm-hmm. we have sex with other people. We just mm-hmm. don't exchange fluids or phone numbers. I feel like that is a very common practice in today's society. It oh, is, yeah. I am with uh-huh. one person. That is my person. That is my partner. But mm-hmm. like we do sometimes mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. give ourselves permission to go out and have physical interactions with other people mm-hmm. with the understanding that those people don't mean anything more to us than just that, a physical encounter.
Yes, that's very queer coded.
I think so, mm-hmm. right? So do you feel like as human beings, we are meant to be with one person physically for the entire duration of our lives? It's a tough question.
No, it is a tough question, but I think no. Because if you think about it in the way that, let's say when you were the first person you ever dated and you had this rule where this one person has to be the one person that you're going to be with for the rest of your life.
No.
That's not necessarily the person that you would say today that that's the person that you wanted to be with for the rest of your life. Now, you know, maybe at that time you did think that, but we can't set that expectation for future selves too, because who knows what life has in store for us, right? Like nobody can say, yes, for sure, this person is for me. What if I get hit by a bus and then my husband has to go and meet some other guy and then I have to haunt their freaking house, you know? Like what if, you know, like who knows? Who knows what, you know, is in store for all of us? So we can't say yes for sure, because if it was me, and I would say no. Yeah, I would definitely say no. What do you think?
I have to agree. I mean, I've been raised, I think we all have been raised on this mm-hmm. idea of you meet someone, you fall in love, that is the person mm-hmm. you are with for the rest of your life. I think that I have put that expectation on so many of my partners now at this point in my life. When I was in my late teens, early 20s, like I would meet people and we would date and I would just be like, this is the one. This is mm-hmm. the guy. This is the one I'm going to marry and be with for the rest of my life. And I think back to that and I'm like, thank God I was wrong about that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Thank God. But now being in a very healthy, sturdy, stable relationship with someone, mm-hmm. you know, I do think that I can foresee myself being with this person for a very long time. However, I also am realistic enough to know that at some point, both of us are going to grow and evolve. And there is always the possibility that we are going to grow and evolve in different ways that no longer align with the two of us being the same partners we are today.
For sure.
And that doesn't mean that I don't expect to be with this person long term.
Tara, the level of maturity right now that is coming out of your mouth, Carrie Bradshaw could never. Carrie Bradshaw could literally never have this depth, maturity, foresight, and like.
But you love your partner.
Are you kidding? Love That's your husband my king. More than, literally. That's my king. Literally. He's the father to my son.
AKA his dog.
He's a human.
He's literally a human. But all of this is to say, like, you love your partner. I love my partner so much. And I plan to for as long as I can. If that means forever, amazing. But mm-hmm. I have been through the ringer enough in my other relationships to know that, you know, sometimes you grow and evolve and your partnership mm-hmm. priorities may not align. If you're mm-hmm. lucky, you will grow together.
For and sure.
You will continue to grow through those experiences.
What a blessing that would be. But absolutely. We don't know.
But the reason I bring all of this up, mm-hmm. not just to answer the question, but to bring it back to the original topic at hand, is because I am, to bring it back to the title, a monogamist. Like, I'm a monogamous girly. I'm part of the Monogamous Girlies Club. And I am in a monogamous relationship with someone who wants to be in a monogamous relationship with me. However, if my partner ever came to me in the future and was like, hey, I'd like to open up our relationship, I don't know how I'd feel about that. As of right now, that would be a deal breaker for me. But I can't speak to who I'm going to be 10 years down the line. That's not fair to her, because it would be really unfair for me to have predicted who I was going to be at this age when I was 22. And those are completely different women. But, you know, there are people like that might be a deal breaker for me. But there are people who, you know, years and years and decades into their relationship are like, yeah, let's open up our relationship. Again, I talked about this in the first episode. It's not something I put into practice, but it is something that I understand, because Ellen was talking about, I think, ethical non-monogamy, which mm-hmm. I would hope it's ethical. If it's not ethical, it's just people cheating on each other. You know, if that's how you choose to live your life, great. But I think at the end of the day, what it boils down to is, like we've said 1,000 times, communication, and expectations.
Yeah, that has to be the way that we run any type of relationship, whether it be friendship, whether it be mm-hmm. a serious relationship when it comes to, yeah, having sex with one another. It has to come down to expectations and communication. And I really like that sentiment as far as being ethical with one another, because we can be ethical, not in necessarily the things that we do, but the things that we expect from one another. You know, we expect ethically, I am telling you, I expect this from you. And ethically, you expect this from me. I think that that concept is really nice. And I think that there is something there, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's about respecting each other's boundaries. I think it's about communicating for sure. those completely. I've known people in non-monogamous relationships where it seemed like everything was fine. It seemed like they were on the same page until they weren't. And then it was because someone's expectations may have shifted, or maybe they were trying something out that they realized isn't for them. I just think at the end of the day, as long as you are with the person who's, I was going to say the right person, but the right person for you is the person who's ideals and practices, boundaries, expectations kind of align with yours. And, you know, as long as you, again, grow together through that, I think that that's the most important part. I'm curious if you, in your past, have ever had to pry exclusivity out of someone, because I definitely have.
That's a great question.
Did you ever feel like you had to, like, in Carrie's instance, because the thing is that I know that we feel like she kind of behaved very immaturely, a little unhinged in this episode, but I think she just kind of felt like she had to pry exclusivity out of this person.
That's a great
and I'm wondering if you've had to do that,
not necessarily pry exclusivity, but pry just having a conversation about it and me feeling like, oh, am I the first one to have to make this move and talk about this, or should I wait for you to do it? Like, do I want you to do it? Do I, you know, that kind of prying, not necessarily being exclusive or like wanting that necessarily, but wanting to have the conversation and knowing we are what we are, or we're not what we are, or am I thinking more? This is more than what it is. I think maybe that is what I've pried in a sneaky way, tried to say, so is there anything you want to talk about with me?
Yeah, no, same. Maybe I didn't necessarily have to pry the exclusivity out of them, but kind of be like, where do we stand in all of this? Because I think sometimes we're always expecting the other person to bring it up when in actuality we need to just most times rip the band-aid off. A lot of 100%. Times that comes up, you know, organically. I think if you were having the right conversation with the right person, it can come up very organically.
For sure.
But I remember, do you remember I broke up with him? We went to the opening night of that, of Desperate Measures. You remember? Do you remember that guy? Yes.
Yeah, I don't remember the name, but yes, I remember the guy.
That's okay. His name will be redacted. So when we started seeing each other, it was very much for me, and I can say this now in hindsight, it was very much a rebound relationship for me. As you know, I had just come off of a very tumultuous breakup with someone.
Traumatic
breakup. And this was kind of one of the first people that I felt like, oh, a little connected to. It was a very, very surface connection, but one that I ended up turning into a relationship just solely because I wanted that exclusivity. But I remember us coming home one day, and we were very much together. I mean, this guy was like with me all the time. And he opened his phone to show me something, and I saw Tinder on there. And I remember being like, I was so annoyed, but I gave him the silent treatment the whole walk home. And he was like, mad. Oh, she was pissed. Because I didn't want to talk about it until I got into the comfort of my own home. We were on the subway. Like, I'll make a scene on the subway, but I didn't want to. So
yeah, we're not having this conversation right now.
No. So we got into my apartment, and I was just like, I just saw Tinder on your phone. He was like, oh, I mean, I haven't been on it. I guess I just like forgot to delete it. And I was like, okay, well, I guess this prompts the question of like, what the fuck are we doing? Because I don't know that you haven't been on Tinder. Do you know how many guys could say that? And when in fact they are. And, you know, he didn't need to, he was like, do you want me to show it to you? And I was like, no, I don't want you to show it to me. I wanted, it did prompt a conversation that we had needed to have. And, you know, it feels kind of cheesy to be like, will you be my girlfriend? It doesn't have to be like that. But it literally is just like, I just want to know that we're not dating other people.
Or if we are, we're on the same page about it.
Correct.
Because I've totally been in the position where I've been wanting to date other people and been in a what maybe they thought was more of a serious relationship. Yeah. I think I have been on the other end of it. One of the first guys that I dated here in the city was definitely, I could tell, more into me than I think I was into him. Maybe, or at least that's how I was reading the situation. And he was wanting to have this conversation of, are we exclusive? Are we this? Are we that? And I was telling him, oh, well, we're still getting to know one another. And I did, I was, you know, it was the first guy that I was dated here in the city. So I did not necessarily want to just be completely monogamous with him at the time, because I was 100% new to being dating in New York and meeting people in the city. So I didn't want to just limit myself right away, right then. And so I've been on the other end of it.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It's fascinating when you move to a new city, because I feel like you can either fall on one spectrum of the dating pool or another, where either you want to keep your options open, or it feels really good to have the security of someone when you're in a new situation, a new city, like you've basically uprooted your life. It can feel really nice to have like that one person that kind of anchors you. But I do feel like there are a lot of people who want to keep their expectations kind of low and keep their options open.
Yes,
and for sure. That's what makes it so important to have those conversations. My last question for you before we try to come to a conclusion about this is, do you feel like app culture has kind of amplified this conundrum of monogamy or non-monogamy? Because it's put the accessibility, I think I mentioned this earlier, it's put the accessibility of the pool, the dating pool, at your fingertips. And do you think that it's kind of inflamed this idea of non-monogamy in the name of so many options? Because the first part of Carrie's question is, in a city like New York with its infinite possibilities, is monogamy too much to expect because there are so many options out there?
I would say no. I would say because of being able to lay out exactly what you want on these kinds of apps. I mean, people can lie and people cannot be dishonest on these types of things 100%, but I just feel if it on my perspective and what I would do, I would be honest and say exactly what it is that I would be looking for if I was on those things, and just saying, I am looking for this, wanting this. There can't be assumption, because now there's a baseline knowledge. There can't be. There just can't be, because I'm telling you exactly what it is that I want.
Totally.
Right away. Before we even meet, before we even have a conversation, a hello, how are you? You know, there is a baseline knowledge. And so I don't think so. I don't think so because of that, because of the baseline knowledge. And if that part of it in apps was taken away, then yes. But I think because you do write a bio about yourself, because you can set, I am looking for this and looking for somebody who is also looking for this, it twists things, you know, because we can be more specific now.
I just think it more so, because I agree with what you're saying, but I do think it just more so offers the temptation. It offers the accessibility.
Yeah, the accessibility is there for sure.
If we're casually dating with the hopes of looking for a relationship, I do think that it gives the option for people to explore their options a little longer and a little more in depth than maybe it did in the 90s, because like, where the hell were you meeting people in the 90s? I guess at a bar, but like, you can literally meet someone who's in Brooklyn on your phone while you're in the Upper West Side.
Yeah, that's true.
So I do think that it's given a lot of access to the sea of people that exist here. And I,
yes, it does open up the world.
Yeah. It kind of makes things a little more competitive than it already felt, because people are like, well, I like you, but I also want to see what's out there. And I guess they can do that whether or not they have the access to the
directory
people in New York. But I do think that it has made it a little harder to commit personally.
Yeah, because there is this kind of, the world is at your fingertips.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Was there anything else that you wanted to talk about before I wrap this up?
No, I wanted to, I mean, well, yeah, I guess, yes. I said no, but no, I love hearing your insight. I love that you are doing this podcast, because you, one, are so open to hearing other viewpoints. I think is really awesome and incredible and wonderful. You. Two, you speak so, you come from a place of understanding in a way, like I said, Carrie Bradshaw could never. This girl was the sex columnist and she was such a prude. Like, she could never. You are so, you know, you're so understanding. And
thank
so
you.
For you to ever consider yourself a Carrie is truly like a disservice to you because you are so much more insightful.
Thank you,
and
baby.
Wonderful and not the villain.
Oh, thank you. Do you think Carrie's a villain? Sometimes.
I think that she is. Yeah. I think, I mean, in a modern sense of the word,
women
should be allowed to be villains and women should be allowed to be complex characters on television. And sometimes that means not being correct all the time.
Totally. Right?
And so, yeah, I think that she definitely can be.
Yeah, she can be.
She can be.
I think that she was so aspirational. And thank you for everything you said. I love you so much. I think she can be very aspirational because of her aesthetic, her look, her clothes. She is the it girl. She's a writer. And you know that's something I love. I love writing and I love exploring relationships and kind of digging into these conundrums. But I almost wish, and I guess we could get this perspective by reading Candace Bushnell's columns because she was the basis for Carrie's character. But I almost wish that we could actually read one of Carrie's articles because we see this show and we basically see all these different perspectives from Charlotte, from Miranda, and from Samantha. And we're getting the spectrum, but is Carrie including that in her column or is it just from her perspective? You know, I think that is what really makes or breaks whether or not Carrie is a good writer. Because if it's only coming from her mind, like if I only talked about this show from my perspective, it would be very boring. That's not meant to be like, I'm not meaning to be down on myself. I just mean to say like, I like to have these conversations because I just think that everybody's perspectives
are so interesting to see. Yeah. To see a different point of view.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I would hope that the column that Carrie wrote fictionally in the show included all the things we get to see in the episode.
One would hope.
But who's to say?
Who's to say?
I will say that as I've gotten older, and I don't know that I've ever talked about which character I identify with in depth, but I think that as I've gotten older, I've identified with Miranda a lot more.
Oh, yeah. She's a queen.
She's got a cat.
Not that being the number one. It's because she has a cat.
I can't tell you how many times I've ordered Chinese food from the same Chinese restaurant. And I have a cat. So studies would show... that I think I'm a Miranda. I just identify with Miranda a little bit more. Like every time I listen to some of her perspectives on relationships and sex and her career,
she's very insightful.
She can be really insightful. Mm-hmm. But then there are times when she digs her heels in a little too hard that I'm like,
yes. I would say you don't, sometimes her selfishness is not one that I would attribute to.
Yeah.
To you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I used to say when people used to ask this question and, you know, talk about it, everybody would be like, well, who are you? And I'd be like, I'm watching the show. I'm not in the show.
I'm in the audience.
I'm watching the show.
I love it.
Like, I don't want to be these girls. They're crazy.
I don't want to be any of them personally.
But I want to watch them.
Okay. So to bring this home.
Bring me home,
baby. What conclusion do you feel like we've reached about whether or not monogamy has become too much to expect in a city like New York that has all its infinite possibilities?
Well, what is the conclusion in the episode? What do you think that they...
Kayla and I talked about this. I said, do you feel like Carrie ever comes up with a conclusion? She goes, no, never. She never really comes up with an answer.
No, because it's always kind of a side answer to the, you know...
Exactly.
The
last line was, in a city of infinite options, sometimes there's no better feeling than knowing you only have one. Yeah, of course. Yeah,
that feels nice.
That does feel nice. It feels so nice, you know, for you to have your partner, for me to have mine. Like, I love it. But that's not an answer to the question, Carrie.
No.
The question was, is monogamy too much to expect? And I think the answer is no.
Yeah.
Not if you are in a relationship where your expectations are being voiced and where
I completely agree.
There's a clear line of communication. However, I will put a little star next to it and say that I think that non-monogamy is a lot more common now than it was in the 90s. And I say 100%. That as someone who is literally a baby in the 90s, as were you. So it's hard for me to say what the dating scene was like. And if anybody out there wants to shed any light, please DM us, call us. Yeah. But just with the direction the society has taken, I do think that it's a lot more common today than it was in 1998.
For sure. And that's a good thing. It's a good thing for societies to evolve. And it's a good thing for new ideas to come into play and for us to learn and to grow and to see, maybe feel uncomfortable by things that we're not too familiar with. It's a good thing.
Yeah, totally. Well, thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you for having me.
I love you beyond. You are one of my most cherished friends in the whole wide world. And
you are the goddamn queen of this podcast and of my heart.
Thank God. And you will be back. I can't wait to have your voice back on this show.
Please.
I'm so glad that you were able to do this with me today.
Because I was itching, you know. Listening to the first few episodes where I was like, I need to say something.
I know. When you sent me that voice message and you were like,
I was painting the walls.
You were painting. Apartment. You were like, I'm painting my apartment and I just have to tell you something.
I just have to tell you, I have an idea.
Oh, I mean, my mom asked. She was like, so when is Gerardo coming on the podcast? I was like, I'm saving him. Don't worry. I've got him.
Oh, don't worry.
But this was such a great introduction.
To torture all you.
I was going to say, the people know. They're going to want more.
Oh, yeah. We'll see.
Ready to shoot your shot? Log into BetMGM every day and play the new Fast Break basketball game for your chance to win prizes. All you need to do is log into BetMGM, head to the promotions page, and fire up Fast Break to find yourself on the b-ball court ready to make a play. Choose to pass the ball to the shooting guard or small forward, or take it to the rim yourself and go for a slam dunk. If you score a basket, you'll win a prize like a boost token, $50 bonus bet, or bonus spins. If you miss, just log in tomorrow and try again. Play Fast Break for your daily shot at boost tokens, bonus bets, or bonus spins. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21+. Plus, this U.S. promo offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER throughout U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona, 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts, 1-800-BETS off in Iowa, 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico, or visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Geico makes it easy to get affordable renter's insurance in as little as 90 seconds. That way, you have more energy for harder things, like the laundry. Why is it so difficult to fold clothes? They just end up wrinkly anyway, or on the floor in a pile that just sits there, taunting you. But with renter's insurance through Geico, at least you know that those clothes and the other things you love are covered. Get more with Geico.